Welcome to Everyday Martial Artist, a weekly podcast where you'll join me, Brian Doucette, as I interview a different martial artist each episode and hear their story. Some guests you may have heard of, and some you probably haven't. Be sure to subscribe where all your favorite podcasts are available. Also, visit our website at everydaymartialartist.com. If you're listening for a specific interview, I sure hope you'll stay and check out the other episodes. A very special thank you to Topher Williams for our custom theme music. And now, the newest episode of Everyday Martial Artist. Everyday Martial Artist is brought to you by KOOnline.com for all your martial arts needs. Sparring and safety gear, rank belts, uniforms, weapons, patches, and more. Wholesale supplies made by martial artists for martial artists. Visit us today at KO-Online.com. Hello and welcome to Everyday Martial Artist. I'm your host, Brian Doucette, and as you do every week, we're joined by a brand new martial artist talking about their life and their journey throughout the world of martial arts and everything else they're involved in. My guest today is not only a martial artist, he's a musician, a singer, a minister of worship arts, and more. He works for Hope Lutheran Church in Fargo and has been there 15 years. He's released two Christian CDs, and he likes to say that the family that kicks together stays together. His wife is a fifth-degree black belt, and his three daughters are a third, second, and first degree, respectively. He's been involved in martial arts for over 40 years and is currently studying for his eighth-degree black belt. He's a head instructor of USA Spirit Christian Taekwondo Academy. Please welcome my guest today and my good friend, Mr. John Bedore. How are you doing today, sir?
Very good. Very good.
I appreciate your time, John. I know we've been talking about this for probably a year and a half, and I'm glad we were finally able to make it happen. You're a busy guy like me.
Yeah. No, I am too. I'm excited.
Cool. Well, I know you've listened to the show before, so you kind of know what we like to do, but I want to go back to the very beginning. I know you've done martial arts for over 40 years, but I want to know where that first interest, where that first spark came from that kind of kicked off that journey for you.
Yeah, you know, I can remember it as if it was yesterday. I started Taekwondo in 1982. I just graduated, so it was the summer of my senior year. I had boxed golden gloves. I was a wrestler. I was a football player. I just loved contact. And I had a friend by the name of Tim Bjerke, who just started Taekwondo over at the Beltline Health Club in Moorhead. And he invited me to a class. He said, you should come and check this out. And so I did. And I have been with it ever since.
So you mentioned you also did wrestling and boxing. So how did that kind of start for you? First of all, which one came first?
Wrestling definitely started with first. I wrestled all the way up. I think I started wrestling when I was third grade and went all the way up to my senior year.
Wow.
I wrestled heavyweight for probably, 4 years.
Okay.
In high school. Yeah, I wrestled that. And Golden Glove Boxing started because a friend of mine by the name of Gary Inger, his dad was a boxer in the service, and he taught me and Inger how to box in the backyard. And then we ended up over at the Eagles Club in South Fargo, and we boxed. We were sparring partners there for a summer.
Wow. Did you ever get into competition with boxing?
No, you know, we just kind of stayed down in the basement of the Eagles, and we just boxed there for a summer. But no, we never got in competition. But, you know, from the time I was young, fighting was just kind of part of the way I grew up. We just fought, you know. Okay.
So before your friend introduced you to the Taekwondo school, what did you know about martial arts?
You know, the movie, everyone says like Bruce Lee was their inspiration. Yep. But for me, it was the movie Billy Jack.
Nice. Okay.
That is what really prompted me into the martial arts world. That was my first, I guess that was my first taste of it, going to that movie, and something stirred in me.
That is cool. Yeah, I remember seeing that as a kid too. Yeah, I mean, Bruce Lee, obviously, and stuff, and you know, Kung Fu Theater on Saturday mornings when I was a kid. And
yeah, me too. I loved it all.
That is so cool. No, I'd love to. I wish I could have met Bong Soo Hong. Was that the name that did the fighting in Billy Jack? But I one of my former guests trained with him for a while, and that was some cool stories to hear about that and stuff, and it was cool. So
I bet it was, man.
Think back to, you know, those first couple classes at the Taekwondo school. You know, once, you know, your friend talked you into it, once you got there, what was it that kept you there?
You know, again, you know, I grew up fighting, so I remember the first practice we sparred, the very first practice.
Wow.
In fact, at one time from Dilworth, I'm born and raised in Dilworth, little town here in Minnesota. And at one time there was like, I think 18 of us from Dilworth that were practicing, and we practiced in a racquetball court. Mm-hmm. And I remember the first night I was like, man, I am so glad I never ran up against anybody in the street that knew how to kick and how to do this stuff, you know, because I was really good with my hands. I was really good on the ground, mm-hmm. but the kicking and the Taekwondo moves was the in-between for me, you know?
Yeah.
It just made sense. And I was hooked. I was hooked from that first practice and man, it's just been an incredible journey. And you know, what I really like about Taekwondo is it took the street fight out of me mm-hmm. because I understood that there could be respect. And I shouldn't use it unless I absolutely have to, you know?
That's cool. And a lot of that has to do with the instructor, obviously. So.
Oh, absolutely. My first instructor was Grandmaster Richie Johnson. And Richie was huge. You know, he was the Grandmaster that came over here to Fargo, was Grandmaster Yun. And Richie was like his first fourth degree mm-hmm. to get his fourth degree under him. And Richie's been not only my teacher, but my lifelong friend, you know, he's just a good man. He's just a really good man.
Talk a little bit about like the difference in classes back then compared to nowadays. I mean, I just love those stories because I've heard just how drastically different they were back then.
Oh my gosh. You know, I remember taking off our gis and we would do body punching for an hour and a half. Our classes would go.
Wow.
And this is all stuff that came out of the main gym in Fargo, you know, and mm-hmm. you think about where we live, Brian.
Yeah.
It's crazy with the grandmasters that we have living in Moorhead, Moorhead, Fargo, West Fargo. Mm-hmm. And they all cut their teeth under Grandmaster Yun. You know, he's the guy that brought it to us. But those classes were intense. I remember duck walking the dike in Fargo, up one side, down the other side. And then we'd have to, and we're barefooted, and we would take a mile run, and then we would do it again, you know. But I was 18 years old, you know, 19, 20, 21. I mean, I was in the prime and I don't think nothing of it. But yeah, to get my students to do that today, they would, I'd probably be in a lawsuit.
Yeah, you'd have some parents upset, I think.
I think they would be like, and I wouldn't have any students. But back then it was just the norm. We just did crazy stuff.
Yeah, I remember one summer I was training. I had gone back home after college and spent the summer back in my hometown of Little Falls. So I traveled to Brainerd to train with John Ingham for the summer. And it was one of the first times he had us running outside and a car ran a stop sign and almost took out four students. That was the last time we ran that summer. So it's like, wow. Yeah. Yeah. That's that was 93, I think, summer I trained with him. So
yeah, I have a lot of respect for him. I fought him back in the day and man, that is one tough guy. Yep. Yeah.
He hits hard. He definitely hits hard.
Yes. And he's really, you know, that was before he got into his kettlebell and his flexibility, but I was amazed. He laid a roundhouse on me that I still to this day don't know how I didn't get knocked out because man, I was after that fight, he beat me and he should have. I was dizzy, man. It was crazy. But yeah, I have a lot of respect for him. Always have.
That summer I was training with him, I was holding one of the big blue kicking shields for him. He was demonstrating. He wanted a big guy to hold it. I'm like, I volunteered. And he was demonstrating in the air turning side kick. And he did like five or six. And then he's like, all right, I'm going to go hard. I'm like, yes, sir. And the people who were there told me that I was about 2 feet off the ground and flew 6 feet back and hit the wall. So
I believe it might
be the hardest I've ever been hit. I don't know.
No, I believe it. Yeah. He's a powerhouse. Yeah. And I love the fact that he's still going, you know?
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. I interviewed him. He was in my first year I interviewed him on the show. So yeah, I've known John for quite a while. He's a good guy. I consider him a friend and I don't get to talk to him anywhere near as much as I used to, but he definitely was fun to talk to and hear the stories from. So.
Right. You know, another thing back in the day, Brian, mm-hmm. that we did is we went to tournaments every weekend. There was so many tournaments going around.
Really?
I remember from 18 until I was, in my mid 20s before I got married to my wife. We were at tournaments everywhere. We went to California. We went to the cities. We went to Canada. We went to Montana. You know, we just went all over. Grandmaster Rich loved sparring, and that was his forte. And so mm-hmm. for so many of my first years, you know, that's really what we trained for, was just tournaments. And we had a blast.
Really? No, I didn't realize you guys traveled that far. I mean, I knew there was a lot in Minnesota and North Dakota, but I didn't realize you hit, Canada and California and stuff, too.
Yeah, the Can-Am Games were something up in Canada. I had never in my life seen that many black belts ever at a tournament.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, unless you go to national competition, but the Can-Am Games back in the day, they were something, man. Back in the 80s, unbelievable. Just in the fighters, wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Wow. Learned a lot.
What type of tournament was it in California that you went to?
We went to the national tournament. I qualified, but then I had also blown out my ankle, so I had to have it reconstructed for the nationals. But Richie Johnson competed in the nationals. Master Daryl Bachmeyer competed from our schools in the nationals, and they did really good. You know, the thing about the nationals is the lower rounds are more what we're used to, but now when you get into the third or fourth round, now you're starting to get some of these taekwondo martial artists that are sponsored, you know, that are on the U.S. team. And man, what a difference. I saw Jimmy Kim, one of the most incredible fights I ever saw. I saw Jimmy Kim match this guy's bounce for bounce for bounce. The guy took a half step in and Jimmy knocked him out with a roundhouse kick.
Wow.
And I saw more than one student at that tournament. I actually met Chuck Norris at that tournament in California at the Nationals. And he was there. Jean-Claude was there. It was crazy. And I saw more than one black belt get taken out on stretchers, you know? And I was just like, oh my gosh, this is definitely the best of the best. It was unbelievable.
That is cool. Wow. Now, in the school you were training at, now, was pretty much everyone there involved in competition? Was it something that pretty much if you were there, you were doing it? Or was there some that didn't do it?
No. Richie somehow, man, he just poured into us the love of competition. And in fact, I remember it was awesome. I think I can say this. He loaned me a white belt so that I could fight. It was me and Tim Bjerke, the kid that got me in. He loaned us some white belts. We had been in, you know, a couple months. Because back in the day when I started, we had to test for our black belts. You didn't get it. I mean, our white belts. You didn't get a white belt. You had to earn it. But anyways, we were close to testing, and there was a tournament that came up before the test, and he said, you know what, I'm going to let you guys fight in this tournament, or I'm going to borrow you this white belt until you test. And here's what happened. We went to that tournament, and both Tim and I won our divisions, and it was funny because I was middleweight, and Tim was heavyweight, and when we came back with those trophies, and, you know, Grandmaster Yan put on a demonstration there that I will never forget. That's when he laid on a bed of nails and had a motorcycle run over him.
I heard about that. Wow.
he did a crazy move on a pig that today would never fly. But I saw that, and I also saw just the incredible strength that he had. So he put on this demo. We're white belts, you know. We go and we win the tournament. We bring the trophies back to our gym. And that is when everybody was like, oh my gosh, we didn't know you could get trophies and all that. Yeah. There'd easily be 15 to 20 of us every weekend for 4 or 5 years. We would go to tournaments all over. It was incredible.
So cool. Did you ever go to any of the, did you guys pretty much stick to strictly Taekwondo tournaments, or did you ever go to any like the open style tournaments?
Yeah, you know, we strictly, our goal was a national team, so we strictly fought Taekwondo tournaments. There wasn't as many open tournaments back in that day that there are now. Yeah, it was Taekwondo, but man, like I said, Canada, Montana, we got our butts handed to us in Montana. I'm telling you, and it was crazy. They had two tournaments going on at the same time. They had point tournament, and then they had nonstop, at that time, USTU nonstop. So we did both tournaments. We started at 8 o'clock in the morning. We got done at 2 a.m. in the morning.
Wow.
And we were so beat up, man. I'll never forget that tournament. It was crazy.
Did you ever compete in forms or strictly sparring?
Yeah, you know, I never really cared for forms. I always did sparring. That was kind of our main thing. I did some weapons. I like weapons.
Okay.
I like nunchucks. Nice. When we went to Canada, I saw Sikaron stick fighting. Nice. So I really like that. I learned that. Yeah, I mean, I can do bow staff. I can do sword. I can do that stuff. But chucks are my favorite.
Yeah. I was just going to ask, what's your favorite weapon? Okay, that's cool.
Yep. I love chucks.
Yeah, I got double. I've told this story a few times that I got my first pair. We had a local sporting goods store in my hometown. This was, you know, probably 84, 85, maybe 83, right around there. And they sold martial arts weapons. And they didn't check your age. I walked in as a 9-year-old kid and bought a pair of nunchucks and throwing stars. It's like, imagine that nowadays.
Oh, that's funny.
The thing is, I still have the same pair of nunchucks, and I still have one of the throwing stars I bought back then. The throwing star is a little bent up because I used it. So
that's crazy. Yeah. I tell a story to my students about my dad, how much entertainment my dad had when I started learning chucks. Because, you know, we didn't have rubber chucks back in that day. We only had wooden ones. So I would put my motorcycle helmet on because I was smart. And I would practice those chucks. And My motorcycle helmet looked like I had been in a bad accident, man. It was beat up. My dad would sit on the steps. I'd go in the backyard, you know, because I'm 18. I went to Moorhead State College. I lived at home to save some money. And he just thought that was the funniest thing ever. And I was hitting that thing. Good thing you have a helmet on. I said, yes, good thing I do, Dad.
Yep. I remember that's a similar thing. I went walking into a school one time and seeing like about 10 students practicing nunchucks all wearing sparring headgear because they had wooden, you know, they had the foam ones weren't out yet. So
no, that's the truth.
So, good times. So did you yourself ever get to do much training with Grandmaster Yuan?
You know, I got my red belt through him.
Nice.
So yes, I went over and I got to see him train. And I mean, man, that was just something. Mm-hmm. It was really, really something to see the power that guy had. And he was brute strength and he was something. That's all I can say.
Yeah. I trained with him one time when I was, I think it was a purple or purple trim. And yep. Master Jim had a class when he had a school over on Fichtner Drive in Fargo, and he had a purple belt and above class. And he didn't tell us Master Yuan was teaching. He just like purple and above class only show up. And he locked the door when we all got there. And then Grandmaster Yuan walked out, and it was a 2.5 or 3 hour class. Other than the one spot, I think about 20 minutes where he taught us meditation, we did not stop moving for like 3 hours. And yeah, it was, I loved it. It was so much fun. Now it would probably kill me, but I loved it back then.
That guy, his body punching was so powerful, man, that he wouldn't have had to kick you at all. He could drop you with a punch of the body.
Yeah.
Unbelievable power. Yeah. And he's not, he wasn't that big of a guy.
No, but no.
He had it.
He was roughly Bruce Lee's size. I mean, roughly the same build, like the height and weight, probably pretty close. Maybe a few more pounds of muscle, but yeah. No, Master Jim used to, I don't know if he still has it, but he kept the heavy bag for a long time back in the 90s one time when Master Yuan used to work out at his gym in the morning, and he split the heavy bag one time, the canvas heavy bag, and Master Jim kept it for a long time.
I believe it.
That's cool. So I'm curious then, I mean, that was your prime, you know, like the mid 80s. Did you ever anything go through your mind of like, you know, hey, why not go for the Olympics?
Oh yeah, man, that's what we trained for, you know, but to go to the Olympics, you had to place in the nationals, you had to place that, I think at that time, maybe the top two. And we just never could, we could just never do it because, we all had jobs. We were going to college. They didn't have, you know, you weren't a paid athlete at that time. But when we ran into the ones that were sponsored or that were at the, Colorado Olympic Training Center, and you'd run into those guys, you know, maybe around the third or fourth or fifth round. I mean, there's just night and day. I mean, they were just incredible, their techniques. And we learned a lot from them. But no, you know, I would have thought Richie would have made it. I would have thought Bachmeier would have made it, you know, because they were good fighters, you know. Yeah. I was a good fighter, but man, I was in that middleweight to heavyweight. These guys were in the lower weights and they would just crush you. I mean, yeah. Wow. I thank God I didn't have to fight Jimmy Kim. I'd probably be on that stretcher, you know?
Yeah. Oofta. Yeah, I've heard quite a few stories about Jimmy, so I don't think I ever got to see him compete, but I heard a lot of stories about him.
Yeah. Did you ever interview Lynette Love?
I did, yes. Did you ever? Yep, Lynette was on the show.
One of the national tournaments, I watched her fight, and she did a lead leg hook kick roundhouse, and in her division, she threw the hook kick, and you could see that the opponent was knocked out. She didn't see that, but she was so fast that she knocked him out with the hook kick and then hit her again with the roundhouse. And I mean, she was snoring before she hit the ground. I'd never seen flexibility and power, and, you know, I mean, unbelievable. Yeah, she really gained my respect. And I've talked about that fight to my students all the time. I said, man, that hook kick roundhouse that you do lead leg, I saw that in action. It works.
That's cool. Yeah, no, her and Herb Perez have both been on the show. Been lucky with them, and both, you know, talked about the Olympic experience, and I'm working on Arlene Lemus too. So hopefully get her on the show. But, I just love the stories from back then. Such cool stuff. And so now you were in it back then, and you've kind of watched the sport change over the years. What are your thoughts now on like Olympic Taekwondo now compared to back then? I know it's so split. People either hate it or they love it, I think.
Yeah. You know, I think it had to evolve. I think back when it was back in the 80s, 90s, it was brutal. Mm-hmm. I mean, it was something, you know. Jay Warwick, have you interviewed Jay?
No, I haven't. No, I've heard the name, but never interviewed him.
Oh, Jay Warwick was incredible. I got to see these guys fight in nationals and just some incredible athletes. Pretty sure Jay made the Olympic team. Juan, I saw Juan fight.
Juan Moreno, yeah.
Yes, Juan Moreno.
He's been on the show too, yes.
Just inspiration to me. I think we had to change. You know, I think they had to change because I think people would have really gotten hurt.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think it changed with the time. So I'm okay with it.
That's good. Yeah. Like I said, it's pretty split. People, I think more of the complaint is about the complaint. I've heard the two complaints. I've heard one is that they don't like the way they do the scoring system. They don't think it's that accurate. And then I've also, obviously, one of my complaints is just, you know, there's literally no punching in it. Whereas I guarantee, like, back when you sparred, there was punching in Taekwondo.
Yes, and I scored because I was a boxer. I was used to body punching. Yeah. And they would score the punch, you know. But they don't score it nowadays. Yeah, and I don't understand the point section. So many points to the head, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say in all my size. So I started martial arts in 84. I started Taekwondo in 92. And I can honestly only remember in adult sparring, I think one punch ever scoring that I personally remember seeing at a tournament I was at. And that was at one of Ingham's tournaments in Brainerd. And it was a brown belt fighting a red belt. Yeah. This was like mid-90s. I should remember his name, Dave. I remember he got his black belt. But they were, it was the fight of the day. They were just, both were doing phenomenal, everything back and forth. And the brown, I think it was the red belt, saw his opening, and he dropped into just a perfect traditional wide stance. And the guy turned to it, and he just threw the perfect straight punch and threw him back, knocked him out of the ring. And it's and the center ref's like kind of like shocked. He's like, point. Like, yeah, damn right, that was a point. It's like, yeah, if that went to scored, there would have been trouble.
Man, that brings back a memory. So we were fighting. We were at a tournament up in Grand Forks in the mall, like in the
really
the hallway. Yes, the hallways of the mall. Wow. And this guy by the name of Tony Altobelli, I graduated with him, Dilworth. He got like his purple trim within the system. But Tony was an incredible body puncher. Tony was maybe 5 feet tall, and he fought in the red belt division against Bill Waite. I don't know if you know Bill Waite.
Oh, yeah,
Bill,
really tall.
Really tall. So here's Tony at 5, and Bill's at like 6'4". I mean, Tony beat Bill at that tournament with nothing but body punches. Wow. He which was amazing, you know, because Bill was so tall and flexible. He could throw an axe kick. He could throw hook kicks. Tony got in on him, and it was the first time I've ever seen anyone win the red belt division with nothing but punches. He just punched him. He knew he couldn't get in close enough to kick him, but he could definitely get in close enough to punch him, and he brutalized Bill. Wow. And I was like, wow, that was something.
That's why I wish they had videos of that stuff back then. I'm sure some people probably had the 8mm cameras and stuff, but it's definitely not easy to find. Like, I'd love to find. I heard stories about Juan Moreno that he used to do, and I asked him about it. He's like, I don't remember. I did a lot of kicks, but someone told me they saw him in a tournament throw this kick where it was a quadruple roundhouse, and the second two were higher than the first two, and it was all like a jumping in one jump, like bam, 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 bam. And I'm like, I want to see that. But I can't. Yeah. I've searched and I can't find video anywhere. And he's like, yeah, I might have. I don't remember. I'm like, wow, to be that, you know, that much of a career and that many that you don't remember doing an amazing kick like that. It's kind of crazy. But
yeah, well, you know, back in the day, after he threw that kick, that became a break for black belts. They would have one, two, three boards, and they would go boom, 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 and then they would finish it with the punch.
Yep.
So it'd be one, two, three, four. Have you seen that?
Oh yeah, yeah.
That break. Yeah. That's a cool break.
Yeah, we still do it. We still do it at our school, and I think for second degree, it's double kick, double punch. And I remember in August of '95, when Master Jim tested for his fifth degree in front of Grandmaster Yun, Grandmaster Jim had to do a triple kick, double punch break. And when he did it, Master Yun said that he was the only person outside of the Korean demo team that he'd ever seen do that break. So that was, you know, he was actually practicing triple kick, triple punch, and it was hitting all the targets, but never actually did the break, which made me kind of sad.
Man, I tell you what, I had the great opportunity of watching Grandmaster Jim Grinstead fight. I think I was I was probably two belts below him,
mm-hmm.
but man, you should have, yeah, yep. He was a great fighter, really good fighter. He was always lean, you know.
Yeah.
And he was in the lower divisions, but just very powerful, very good technician.
Only got to see him, well, technically twice. I saw him fight twice. One time that we were here at, I think it was Jamestown, and they put on, after the Taekwondo tournament of the night, they put on a kickboxing match. And at the last minute, and Grandmaster Yun was like reffing it. And at the last minute, one of the kickboxers dropped out, and it was like a first time fighter. And they talked Master Jim into doing it. And of course, if you know Master Jim, he's such a nice guy. This guy was so overmatched. And Master Jim's like, he's like teaching him while he's fighting the guy. He's like, oh no, that was good. Next time go this. And like,
yeah,
it was like, the guy's probably like, thank you. Thank you for not killing me. But the other time I saw him fight was at Master Mike Summers tournament in Detroit Lakes. We went down there and he had no intention of sparring. He hadn't trained in like 6 months. And Spencer Brandt at the last minute decided he wanted, Spencer Brandt wanted to fight, but he said only if I find another master. He's like, I've been training for this for a year. I want to fight in this tournament. And he could talk no one else into it. So we convinced Master Jim. We went up, hey, Master Spencer, Master Jim's going to fight. He's like, why him? It's the look on the face of like, of all the masters here, why him?
Right.
Yeah, it was a good fight.
Yeah, man. I knew all those guys. I knew Spencer really well. You know, Eric Greenquist out of WAP. I mean, I hung with all those guys.
Yep. And Brent Jordheim. And I used to go to all those tournaments.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What drew you into the teaching side of martial arts? Kind of what belt did you get your first taste of that and what led to that?
Yeah, you know, so Richie must have saw something in me because my instructor, he would always have me like hold paddles and work with other students. So when I got my red belt, I had an opportunity to go to Mayville College. I was a music major, and I was at Morehead State, and Mayville made me a good offer to come to there to join the program. So I was a red belt, and at that time, if you had a master instructor, they could allow you to teach. So I opened up, when I went to college in Mayville, I opened up a school in Mayville, actually taught as a college credit because the athletic director there, I would just turn in my gradient to him, and then he was the one that could award them the credit. But I had a huge school, man. I think when I was up there, I don't think I was maybe six months into teaching, and I had like 75 students coming through that program.
Wow.
As a red belt.
Yeah.
And then Master Richie would come up and do the testings, you know, because I couldn't test.
But
that is really where I just love teaching. I've always loved teaching and passing it on. And it's funny how I told you I never really did patterns in tournaments. But when we shifted gears and we came under my grandmaster, his name is Grandmaster Chu Ku Yun, and he's the founder of the Korean Taekwondo Academy, KTA, out of Indianapolis. He told me, he said, John, you're a good sparrer. He said, but if you can become good at patterns, you will be a great sparrer. He said, because if patterns are the foundation for sparring, and no one had ever told me that before, ever.
Okay.
So I really enjoy patterns now. I've learned to love them and teach them and the detail of them. And so he kind of turned things, he really turned things around for me in aspects of that. And then just his mentorship over the last 30 years. Mm-hmm. Just seeing him as a ninth degree in a true Korean grandmaster who people just respect and love, and he's got such a great reputation. Just really a God thing that man ever came into my life.
That's cool.
And he's helped me. He's helped me in just so many ways. I really respect him.
So talk a little about your black belt test. What was that experience like?
Oh my Lord, my black belt test was 7.5 hours long.
Wow.
I lost 11 and a half pounds at that black belt test, and I'm not kidding you, man. It was crazy. It was absolutely crazy. We were the first bunch of black belts that Grandmaster Richie now, Johnson, we were his first group that he got to test, and I'm telling you, he tested us. It was insane. It was absolutely insane. Yeah, I've got pictures of that test, and we look like we have been... We ran the marathon, you know, it was insane. Yeah. You know, he just, he told us too. He said, you know, he let people come in and watch that test. So that was the first time that I think an audience was allowed to come in and watch us, but we did everything. We broke and we sparred. We did round after round. He loved to spar. We did all our materials right, left sided. At that time we were doing Paul Gaze and Tae Gook patterns. We did them both. So, you know, 16 of those plus choreo. I mean, it was something.
So do you remember what was your hardest break from your black belt test?
Oh, there were so many.
Yeah.
I think it was the first time I got to do brick breaks.
Okay.
And I think it was, three bricks. And yeah, you know, we've never done brick breaks, and all of a sudden now we're doing them. I got them, but I remember my hand afterwards, like, wow, this was the real deal. Yeah. That was a hard test. I never forgot that test yet. And then the second degree wasn't much better. I think that one was maybe 5 hours. You know, he gave us a little grace, but it was 6 years, you know, between my first degree.
Really?
Yeah, my first degree took me 5 years to get my black belt. And my second degree took me 6 years to get it. And during that test, somebody punched me and split my lip wide open through my tooth.
Dang.
And I had about maybe an hour left of that test. And, you know, if you can't go on, then you have to wait for another test. And at that time, they were only testing black belts maybe once a year if we were lucky. So I finished that test with a rag in my mouth and my hand up, because I knew that I didn't want to wait another year. And yeah, I made it. But dang. Wahoo, that was crazy.
So was that normal, the 6 year wait from first to second, or was that not
normal? No, that I, you know, Richie was just never one on testing. I think he loved sparring so much that was his focus, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I even heard that from his students today. You know, Richie still teaches in Detroit Lakes, and he just, you know, they don't test for sometimes 6, 7, 8 months.
Yeah.
So yeah, you know, in between their colored belts. So yeah, but we didn't know any different. That was his deal. And so we did that.
That's cool. And I've heard he doesn't really promote that he still teaches. I mean, I've heard about it from a lot of people, but like if you search for it, you won't find it. You have to know where to look.
Yeah. I don't promote either. I'm not even on Facebook anymore. It's all word of mouth.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all word of mouth. Yeah. And, my school is crazy.
Yeah.
I can only do two nights a week because I'm so busy with, you know, the calling of my life to work at the church. And yeah, I just said, this is what I got. So I teach Mondays and Thursdays, and my classes are only an hour long. And I have some really, really good students, you know, but my philosophy is different.
Yeah. Well, so talk about that. Talk about USA Spirit and kind of what led you to start a Christian Taekwondo Academy compared to what you were doing originally.
Yeah. Boy, that was crazy how it all came about. So when I was 30 years old, you know, you realize I started Taekwondo when I was 18. So I was 30 years old. I had given my life to Christ. I had went to a crusade with my brother-in-law, and I accepted Jesus as my Lord and Savior. And from that moment on, Brian, everything changed for me. I remember telling God, at that crusade, when I surrendered to Jesus, you can have everything that I have. Now, at that time, I was helped building a multi-million dollar pizza company, had a great job. I lived out on a lake. I was making a lot of money for that, you know, for that year. Mm-hmm. And I told him, you can have everything. I want to do everything for you. Well, within about 7, 8 months after surrendering to him, he had me quit my job, sell my house, and move up to the Turtle Mountains of North Dakota and run a Bible camp.
Wow.
That would have been in 2000, and I think it was in 2005.
Okay.
And I had just gotten my fourth degree at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember going up to the Turtle Mountains to run the Bible camp. And I remember thinking, well, I turned all my schools over to some of my black belts. At that time, I had a lot of schools.
Mm-hmm.
I turned them all over, and I thought I was done. Truthfully, I thought I was done with Taekwondo. So I remember folding up that brand new fourth degree master belt that I worked so hard and wanted, you know, I mean, and folded it up, put it in a drawer up in that camp. And I said, okay, God, well, Taekwondo has been great, man. I thank you for all the years you gave me. And it wasn't 2 weeks. 2 weeks that belt sat in that drawer, and I get a call from St. John's, North Dakota, which is an Indian school. It's on the you know, Native Americans up there. And this guy says, "Hey, I hear you teach Taekwondo." The principal, and I said, "Well, how did you hear that?" You know, and he goes, "No, word got out." He goes, "I tell you what," he goes, "I got a bunch of red belts up here that need a Taekwondo instructor." And I said, "You know," I said, "Here's the deal. I'm a Christian. I've laid my life down to Christ. So if I go back and teach Taekwondo, I'm going to teach it with a Christian philosophy. I'm going to teach that Jesus Christ is the one and only master. And no matter how many stripes God gives me on this black belt, it doesn't compare to the stripes he took for me as he died upon that cross." And the guy on the end of the phone goes, that might be a problem. I said, "Well, it's not a problem with me, man. Good talking with you."
Mm-hmm.
Well, 2 days later, he calls me back and said, "I presented this to the parents of these red belts. They want to meet you. Would you come in for an interview?" So I went there, came in for an interview, talked to the parents, and found out that ATA was up there and the red belts. And I said, "Well, guys, how long have you trained, you know, to get your red belt?" 9 months. I said, you've been in You've trained for 9 months and you're a red belt? Yeah, how long did it take you to get your red belt? I said, it took me to get my red belt probably, oh my gosh, 4 years to get my red belt in our system. So I said, okay, I'll teach you, but I'm teaching with the Christian philosophy. And so what that looked like is put my uniform and my belt back on. I would open in prayer. I would teach them our curriculum. And then I would close in prayer. And at the end of the prayer, you know, I'd say, hey, if you want to know more about this Jesus, come and talk to me. Well, yeah, some of the parents and most of the students gave their lives to Christ. I never was able to test them beyond the belt that this guy gave them.
Yeah.
Because I was only up there for 2 years.
Oh.
And in those 2 years, a lot of them dropped out because they just weren't used to my style. You know, yeah. I said, you're going to earn your belt. You're not going to buy your belt. I'm sorry. I never bought my belts, man. I worked for my belts and I'm going to teach. This is the way I'm going to teach. But it was really cool. I got to get them to come to a Bible camp. And we actually ran a Taekwondo camp at the Bible camp where I had about 75 people come up to that camp.
Wow.
So I thought I was done. Really, that was the 2 weeks I had off was for God to reset. So at that time, I was under All-American Taekwondo.
Mm-hmm.
When I was up in the Turtle Mountains, I needed a different name because All-American Taekwondo had nothing. They weren't professing Christianity. So I called my grandmaster, Chukuyun, and I said, sir, I want to use your name, USA Spirit. So there used to be uniforms and headgear and chest protectors that my grandmaster, that was his business, and it was called USA Spirit. And it was the USA Spirit equipment, you know, some of the best uniforms, everything. Mm-hmm. I said, I want to use that as my new school, but I want to call it USA Spirit Christian. I want Christ the center Taekwondo. Are you okay with that? And, you know, he said something to me that I'll never forget. He said, you know, John, I'm a Christian too, but no one knows that. I don't live my life like you do. He said, my Christianity is, my relationship with Jesus is more private. He said, you wear yours on your sleeves. You know, everyone knows that you're a Christian. He said, I would be honored for you to take that name and just run with it. So ever since then, I've been known as USA Spirit Christian Taekwondo Academy.
Wow, that is cool. What a cool story.
Yeah.
Think back to that very first class that you taught at Mayville State.
Yes.
To now. You're still teaching now. Over all those years, what has changed the most about your teaching style over the years?
Unfortunately, nothing has changed.
Really?
I work them. You know, I'm not looking to have the most students. I'm really not. Mm-hmm. I want the students that know for a fact they can defend themselves in a situation if things go bad. I want a student that feels like they've earned their belt. They haven't bought their belt. Therefore, I've taught thousands of people over my careers. But out of all the years I've been, I bet I don't even have 200 black belts.
Okay.
I bet you in the years that I've been teaching, I maybe have 150
okay.
in all those years. Yeah, I mean, I'm just not willing to compromise the way that I was brought up because it's done me well, you know?
That makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it just has. I'm confident in what I can do. I'm not afraid. I'm just not afraid. If a confrontational situation comes down, my wife, my girls, my students are going to be trained in such a way that they can defend themselves and they can bring help to others. You know, so my black belts, when they get their black belt, say, listen, if you hear a call for help before I tie this black belt on around your waist, I want to know that you will go because I said I will. If I'm in a parking lot, if I'm in a mall and I hear somebody yell for help, I'm going.
Nice.
I'm going to bring help to that situation. So, yeah. So I teach. Yeah, that's the way I teach. You know.
I got to ask them. I've always wondered this. I've wondered it before, but since you mentioned you had a wrestling background, did it ever mm-hmm. cross your mind to get involved in the grappling side of martial arts?
Yeah, you know, when it came out. Well, here's the deal. I watched it, mm-hmm. and I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, I think about the brain cells that I lost sparring with roundhouse kicks to my head. I know for sure of three concussions that I had that were untreated. You know, I remember one time this guy whacked me in the head so hard that I was seeing stars and they put me back in. And I don't know how I survived that fight without getting just knocked cold, but I did. So I looked at that. I looked at the mixed martial arts and I have a huge respect for it because mm-hmm. everything that I love, the wrestling, the boxing, the kicking, is part of me, but I'm like, man, I can't imagine if I would have done that I'd still be able to teach at 60 years old.
Yeah.
Because I think the wear and tear on their body and not only the concussions that they get, you know, I don't know if I would have done it. I don't know if my body, I think I respect my body and my brain more than that. Mm-hmm. That's a brutal sport, man.
What about just like straight grappling? Would you ever consider, I realize you're very super busy, but if you had time, would you ever consider maybe getting into jiu-jitsu and doing some jiu-jitsu tournaments?
You know, that would be cool. I've had some opportunities to train different martial artists. Mm-hmm. I've had karate guys come in. I had one guy, big guy, and he was jiu-jitsu. So yeah, we've been on the ground and we've done some of that stuff.
Cool.
But you know, for me, I really want to pass on the beauty of patterns and I love Hapkido. I love self-defense, knife, gun. I like the practicality of what we can teach these kids today in this crazy world. And so I want to spend my time doing that. You know, my grandmaster told me a long time, kind of asked me the same thing. And I said, I think I want to focus on Taekwondo. I said, how about you, sir? You know, why haven't you done some of that stuff, you know? And he said, no, John, he said, he's a true master and a grandmaster will stay focused on one discipline. They can still glean from the others, mm-hmm. but they need to pick their focus. And I thought, you know, that's wise. That's nice. True. So Taekwondo is my focus.
That's cool. So I'm curious. I've interviewed probably a handful, maybe three or four, you know, like musicians and singers on the show. And I'm curious, in your personal experience, what do you think from your martial arts background and training has helped you with your music?
Yeah. You know, I think of all the kimase punches and horse stance, you know, mm-hmm. that we used to drop down and just for hours. I think that the kiap, just the yelling, really helped my lungs and my volume of being able to sing. I think that's been great. And I just think the conditioning that I have done, and that's also helped my breathing. Because, you know, singing is all about breathing, circular breathing, you know, all of that. And I think Taekwondo, you know, some people say, well, the yelling is going to hurt your voice. Well, I was trained how to sing, you know, so I know how to not hurt it. But no, I definitely think, you know, my second CD that I put out is called Every Move I Make. And there was a camp song called Every Move I Make. And if you look on that CD, I am actually in uniform breaking. I'm at a tournament doing a brick break. Nice. And that's the cover. Because I said, you know, every move I make, I want to make it onto the one and only master, you know,
that's cool.
To his glory, not mine. So, that's how it all came about.
I think I actually remember that CD because I think my mother-in-law actually had that. And she's like, oh, do you know this guy? He's in a karate uniform.
That was
before we, I mean, I knew you because I met you one time. I met you, I don't know, probably three, four, five times all the years, but I met you. First time I met you was you put on, if I remember correctly, you put on a tournament in Holly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I came to that tournament to watch my friend Damien spar. I think it was 95.
Yeah, I remember Damien.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And back then, I think back then he still had the long hair. No, that was he always had the long hair, and that was the first he shaved his head the day before the tournament. That was the first time he shaved his head, was the Holly the Holly tournament.
Listen, I remember that tournament. He fought in the finals, a guy by the name of Ron Stensgaard.
Yeah.
And Ronnie was older than him, and those guys had a battle. It was a battle, man.
Yeah.
Damien was tough. Ronnie never got his black belt, but he was like a red belt. I think he was really close. But boy, I tell you, I remember that fight.
Yeah, Damien never got his black belt either.
He
quit as a purple or purple trim. And I remember he had quit, and it was like he had taken a year off, and he showed up at one of the Master Gym tournaments, the Fargo Open. And he's like, I'm thinking of entering today. So my Master Gym's like, you got a uniform? He goes, yeah. He goes, go get it. And he lets me enter. He goes, I signed you up. He goes, oh, thank you, sir. He goes, no, I signed you up in black belt division. And he had him fight, and he won black belt division as a purple belt after not training for a year.
No, I'm telling you, he was one of the most natural fighters I've ever seen. And that kid had a drive. And, you know, what did he weigh? 140?
I say at my peak back then, I was like, I was 173 when I was in the best shape, and he was definitely less than me. So I'd say, 140 to 150, maybe 155.
He punched and kicked like a 250-pound guy.
Yes, he did.
Unbelievable. I don't know where that power or that strength came from, but anytime he sparred, and he was flexible, he was fast. Yeah, I remember that. I'm back there right now watching him.
Yeah. Fight. Oh, his flexibility. Yeah. I remember he'd be like literally nose to nose with someone, and that circulating kick would come out of nowhere and just knock their headgear off. They wouldn't see it coming. It was just wow. Yeah. I took that kick many times to the head when we were sparring each other.
Yeah, I bet you did, because he could throw it out of nowhere and just hit you. Boom. Yep, you wouldn't even see it coming.
Exactly.
Hold up.
Cool.
That's a shame, man.
Yeah, I know.
He didn't get his black belt. There's a kid that deserved it, you know?
I tried to talk him into coming back so many. What happened was, I want to say I was testing for my brown, and he was it brown? Yeah, it was brown. I was testing for my brown, and he was still a purple. And Master, we had been training together. Master Jim was going to let him double test to go to brown so we could go for our black belts together like a year and a half later. And he quit right before that. He never did. And he knew everything. I mean,
right.
And that's funny. It's like, I'll call him up randomly. I'll call him up. You know, I remember this like 2 years ago, I called him up and it's like, you know, hey, I'm curious. Do you remember this technique? He's like, dude, I've been out. I'm like, Damien. And he'll repeat it like nothing. It's up there. And he's like, this, and this. I'm like, thank you. It's still in his head. So,
yeah. Well, listen, the fact that Grandmaster Jim would double promote him, because I know he doesn't do that hardly at all.
No, he's never.
You have to be extremely special. Yeah. And I remember the relationship that those two had. Jim was more like Grandmaster Jim was like a dad to him, helped him through some tough times. But that says a lot.
And he technically wasn't going to double promote him. He was going to let him double test. Damien knew everything to go to purple trim and to brown. He was going to let him do it in one, and he learned it in like 4 months. So he probably knew better than I did. So
that's incredible.
It was crazy. But so I know you mentioned philosophy a lot. So I'm curious, in all your years, what is there one philosophy that stands out for you?
Well, for me, the only philosophy that really stands out is my Christian belief. You know, I can't tell you how hard it was when I never dreamt about this, but when I proclaimed Christianity into the martial arts world, you know, I was one of the first Christian martial artists to do it. Mm-hmm. I would go to tournaments. I remember going to the Civic Center, and my team would go, and we had on our, you know, USA Spirit Christian Taekwondo Academy. And I remember walking by, and I heard from the stand saying, I can't believe that guy put Christian in his Taekwondo school. You know, I could hear that. Wow. But the really surprising part was the church. The churches would not accept. Well, for one thing, you know, Taekwondo was just, they couldn't understand how a Christian could even do Taekwondo, more or less how you could bring Christ into it. So I've had some great, great conversations about that. And it's the best thing I could have ever done, to be honest.
That's crazy. Yeah. Nice. Mm-hmm. All right, I have some fun questions to wrap up the interview, and I know you've heard some of these before, but this one I want to know who are like 3, 4, 5 names you would have put on your personal Mount Rushmore of martial arts.
Ooh, well, I'd have to put Grandmaster Richie Johnson.
Nice.
I'd definitely put my Grandmaster Chukuyun. He's it. He has two Grandmasters underneath him from Indianapolis, and Garth Cooley would be a guy that I've always respected. Now, Garth is Grandmaster Yun's first like Grandmaster that he's ever presented, and Garth was the captain of the U.S. Olympic team.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So Garth in his own right is something. I put him up there. If I'm going to go, you know, if I want to go into the movies, I don't know who the guy was that played Billy Jack, but whoever that, you know, that spoke to me as a kid. Yeah. And that's really what got me into it. You know, I respect Jet Li, Bruce Lee, nice. Those guys. I grew up watching Kung Fu Theater.
Yep.
And I respect them. I think that would be my guys.
Cool. How about a favorite martial arts book?
The Book of Five Rings.
Nice. I love that.
Yeah.
That one's been picked a lot more than I thought it would have been when I started the show. It's a lot of people mention that one. It's a great book.
It is. It's a deep book. Well, it's a book that you need to read 5, 6, 7 times to really get the gist of it, you know?
Easily. Yep. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. This one you may not have an answer for. We'll see. Do you have a favorite martial arts video game? Did you ever get into games at all?
You know, I never did. I wasn't a gamer.
Okay. Mm-mm. Cool. That was an easy one. All right. How about a favorite martial arts TV show?
It would have to be Kung Fu.
Nice.
Yep. Okay. I grew up as a kid watching that.
Did you hear they're remaking it as a movie starring Donnie Yen?
No.
Yeah. Ooh. They just announced it like 2 weeks ago. I'm kind of excited. I mean, I wasn't a fan of the remake TV series that came out like 2 years ago, but a movie with Donnie Yen, I'm excited. I'm really excited.
So people, my wife can't understand how I love to watch on Netflix, all the martial arts movies that are in their native language.
Yeah.
And I don't care about really the, subtitles. What's going on. I don't care about the subtitles. Oh. I just love the techniques. I just love to watch their techniques. And if I can learn something and bring it, you know, it's awesome. I love watching those movies. It drives people crazy, but I said, no, I like to just take a look at stuff.
That's cool.
See how it works.
Did you see the brand new series? I haven't watched it yet, but it just came out. Yes. I think yesterday it was just released. It was a series called House of Ninja.
No, I'll I'll watch it.
It looks really good. I watched the trailer. I'm like, ooh, I'm going to watch that this weekend. So I might be binging a few episodes this weekend when I'm done editing. So.
All right. I'm going to definitely watch that. I'm into that stuff. It's fun.
All right. Now, how about a favorite martial arts movie?
Well, yeah, you know, it's got to be Bruce Lee, Enter the Dragon.
Okay. Nice. That's such a good movie. So when it was out in theaters last summer, did you get to go to it for the 50th anniversary? Oh, yeah, it was so cool seeing it on the big screen. I went in August, and my son Colton asked if he could go with, and that was my first time ever seeing it on the big screen. I had only seen it on video before that, so it was quite the experience.
So in our 3-2-1s, we have, I think it's a third set, three step, where we do the Bruce Lee face mash, where you have to jump to the side. And that's what I named it. My students only know it as the Bruce Lee face mash. And then these young kids are like, well, who's Bruce Lee? I said, hey, go talk to your parents. Go talk to your parents about him and see if they'll let you watch some Bruce Lee movie.
That's awesome. That is so cool.
Yeah.
Nice. That's cool. All right, now this one, the final question. This one I'm really curious about because I know you grew up, you were into the fighting, and you love watching all that stuff. So it doesn't have to be a martial arts movie. Any movie you've ever seen, favorite movie fight scene?
Man, it would be the first Rocky. When Rocky came out, because of my boxing background and stuff, man. Yeah. Oh, he was an Italian. I'm Italian. I mean, yeah, that spoke to me.
I like it. I like it. Rocky's only been picked about probably 5 or 6 times, and I've asked that. And that one, I thought that would be one of the most picked ones. So that's I love it. I love Rocky. I love all the Rocky movies. Jada and me have watched them all. And when Creed came out, she wanted to watch Creed. I said, only if you watch all the Rockies first. So we watched all the Rockies, and we've watched all the Creed movies. And
I remember drinking eggs like Rocky did and working out on the bag and all that guy. Yeah, that would be the one.
That is cool. I love it. Cool. Well, before I let you go, John, anything that I forgot to maybe ask that you want to make sure we get out there and like I said, anything you want me to put links for when the episode comes out, I will get it out there for you. And I think I told you before, it's about 2 months out. Your episode will be out in, I think, the second week of first week of April. So.
Yeah, you know, I think I'm good. You know, I God brings the students that he wants me to teach. So I'm good. I don't think I need anything.
Cool. Well, I know we've been planning this for a while, and I so appreciate your time, and I'm so glad we got to do this, and I can't wait till the episode comes out.
Me too, brother. Thank you for this, and thank you for what you do, because it's really important to just listen to all the years of martial arts and the negative. You know, some people think they just can't get their heads around martial arts, like we're teaching people to beat up people. That's not it at all.
Right.
We're not. We're doing the absolute opposite. We're teaching them not to be violent, but if violence finds you, you have the right to defend yourself.
Exactly.
You know, that's it. Yeah. All right, brother.
I got for you. Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you. Have a good night.
Thanks for listening to Everyday Martial Artist. We hope you will join us every week for a brand new episode with a different martial artist telling their story. If you enjoy the show, be sure to leave us a review. Also, be sure to check out our website at everydaymartialartist.com. There you can find all of our episodes and contact us to suggest guests and ask questions. Again, thanks for listening to Everyday Martial Artist, and we'll see you next week.